Good morning, Bodhisattvas. Why am I calling you Bodhisattvas? Because for whatever reason, something about your being here today, you're making the decision to come here, shows that there's some kind of karmic connection to the Bodhisattva way, just by showing up. Sometimes we don't know why we do something. Don't you have that person come in?
Seicho.
Okay. So what is a bodhisattva? Someone who wakes up. And when you wake up, you realize that who you are depends on who everyone else is. All those around you. So bodhi, you know, means awakened, illuminated, illuminating, awakening. And the sattva is usually translated as being, although it also, if it's parsed in a slightly different way, can mean courage. So it kind of comes laden with the quality of courage as well as being. So think of this courageous, enlightening being. And don't separate from that. We're not talking about someone up on a pedestal. We're talking about each one of us. That quality that we cannot deny of enlightening energy. That quality where we can serve others by enhancing and strengthening our enlightening qualities. So what would that look like for each of us? The answer is a little bit different, a little bit the same. There's a koan, actually, but I'm going to tell it more as a story. The koan derives from an ancient fable or story, Buddhist story. And I'm paraphrasing this from Nyogen Senzaki's telling of the story, which is in Roko Chayats Roshi's wonderful new book, Eloquent Silence, which I encourage you to read. It's a fine book. It's about the life and teachings of Nyogen Senzaki, who is one of my personal saints. He was a maverick who came to this country. Everything always seemed to not quite work for him from his birth on. He was adopted, he was a foundling, never quite knew. The priest that found him said that his mother was Japanese, but he never believed it. He says, "I look Chinese, I must be Chinese." And he was one of the very first to come to this country at the turn of the century, of the previous century, and was told by his teacher to teach, but not for 17 years after he had studied, grew up in a temple, and tried to start a kindergarten in Japan, and the finances weren't right, so he moved to San Francisco, and he worked for 17 years at things like a dishwasher, just on the very bottom of the economic level, and only in his late middle ages was he able to start teaching in Los Angeles, in Japantown. But he never really had a temple. He just taught people on the street and in living rooms and so forth. It's a wonderful, wonderful man. So I encourage you to read this book. Today I'm talking, he was a bodhisattva, and he always started his talks with, "Dear bodhisattvas." So he tells this story that is also a koan in the Mumon Kan about a conference that was given, a huge conference of all the Buddhas in all the worlds. So there was this huge conference, and all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas were invited. And it was held in a far-off land, not in our Buddha sphere, but in another Buddha sphere. And Shakyamuni went there accompanied by his Jisha Manjusri. And as they went to enter, Manjusri was not allowed to enter into the room. He wasn't allowed to enter into the room because he, although he was the highest in wisdom, he still did not have enough compassion to balance his wisdom. So he went off, and the meeting proceeded, and he went off to work on his compassion. And he practiced and tried to find a way to balance this great wisdom, the great wisdom of emptiness, right, that Manjusri has, with this quality of compassion that seemed to be lacking. So finally he said, "I got it. That aspect of my mind is now full and fruitful," and he went back to the conference. But everyone had left, except for two people. One was Shakyamuni Buddha, and then right near Shakyamuni Buddha was sitting a young woman, sitting in absolute samadhi, deep concentration and focus. Well, you know, women weren't thought of very highly at that time. So not only was Manjusri shocked that it was an ordinary mortal, but it was a woman, and a young woman, sitting very close to Shakyamuni Buddha. And Manjusri kind of got upset. And he said, "How can a woman sit so close to the Buddha and attain such a deep state, and I cannot?" Shakyamuni said, "Well, ask her yourself." And Manjusri walked around her three times, snapped his fingers, and she continued to sit in deep samadhi, in deep focused concentration meditation. She didn't look up. She was just right there. So then he performed a miracle, Manjusri, swept her up to the third Brahma heavens, and tried all his special magical powers to bring her out of samadhi, but he was not able to do so. So she just sat there. Shakyamuni Buddha said, "Well, even 100,000 Manjusris cannot stir her state. But down below, past 1,200 million lands, innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, there is a bodhisattva by the name of Momyo." By the way, Momyo means seed of delusion. "He can bring her out." And instantly when he said that, coming out of the ground with the kind of, you can imagine the special effects if we could show this, the earth kind of separating, and out of the earth comes Momyo, a bodhisattva of the first level. Now, Manjusri is a bodhisattva of the 10th level. So this means that Momyo has just recently entered the realm of bodhisattvahood. He bowed, paid homage to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Wake her up." Momoyo went to the woman, snapped his fingers once, and the girl came out of meditation. So that's a koan. But what I'm going to do today is treat it as, you know, from its origins, its original origins, Mahayana mythology. How could Manjushri, the wisest of the teachers, at the highest level of bodhisattvahood, how could he fail to wake her? And how could Momyo, just a novice really, how could he succeed? Mumon, the compiler of the book of koans that this is in, said, "If you can grasp this, then you can enter samadhi while living in the world of delusion." So it's pretty obvious why I chose this story for today. If we can grasp this, then we can enter samadhi while living in the world of delusion. So the obvious point is, as Maizumi Roshi used to always tell us, if the water is too pure, the fish won't be nourished. Huh? You just can't put a fish in distilled water and expect it to survive. If there's no mud, if there's no delusion, the lotus will not flourish. And there's no chance that anyone in this room is free of delusion. So what is this? How does this help us? Isn't it true that if we're able to look, you know, the imagery is so great. Momyo comes out of the earth, right? Manjushri comes flying from the sky. Momyo comes out of the earth. If we are willing to look deeply at the mud, at our delusions, our own karma, not what we want our karma to be, but our own karma as it is, our suffering, unless we're willing to do that, we really can't serve others. We can try to serve others, but we won't be serving others. Unless we're really able to tune in to the gift of our karma. It is a gift. It takes a long time to see that. The gift of our karma is what we have, the tool that we use to serve others. Through our own insight into what stimulates us into skillful and unskillful actions, it's through that insight that we're able to uncover compassion for ourselves, which leads to compassion for others. Then we're able to shed that kind of rigid, judgmental energy that drives so many unskillful motivation towards helping someone else. So the question is, how can we act with wisdom and not fail as Manjushri did? Manjushri was coming from a position of better than, some special place. And Momyo says, "Oh, something needs to be done, I'll just do it." Manjushri is coming from a philosophical position of emptiness, which is true. It's true. And yet that truthfulness doesn't serve. What does serve is this world of reality, this world of relativity that Momyo's in. We have to realize that we are both living in a world of, we're all living in a world of emptiness, and yet in each moment individual parts of us relate to individual parts of all other beings that are existing in this very time and space. We influence everyone in our field. That's what we call a Buddha field. Everyone in our sphere. All the time. When we were walking very slowly together in Kinhin, we were influencing one another. Influencing one another. Very subtle ways. Very. Body language. How hard your foot hits the ground. The vibrations. Constantly affecting others and being affected by others. If we're able to co-create a field that is loving and compassionate and wise, then we can develop our bodhisattva qualities. Even in the Pali scriptures, in the early days of the Western accumulation of Buddhism, there was a lot of talk of, well, the Bodhisattva was only a Mahayana phenomena, but actually you can find descriptions of the Bodhisattva in the Pali scriptures, in particular the Sigalovada scripture, and also in the Vimalakirti scripture. In both of those, there's a description of the four elements that produce bodhisattvas. Four methods of guidance, as Dogen Zenji called them. He took those four methods and wrote a wonderful fascicle in the Shobo Genso called Bodhisattva Shisho. And you can find that in Kaz Ta-Nehisi's Moon in a Dewdrop, his first book, which is a really kind of an introduction to the fascicles of Dogen, which I recommend. So the first of the four methods is to freely give. Dogen tells us that freely giving means not being greedy. So the way I understand that is not setting ourselves out off from others. To be greedy is to only want for my small self. Just for me. And not to see how I'm not separate from others. The minute I see that I am part of a larger group, that greediness drops away because of the strength of gimme, 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 this hungry ghost drops away. So Dogen says, even if we give what we're getting ready to give to discard anyway to people we don't know, still we are freely giving. Have you ever experienced that, you know? A jacket you just can't wear anymore, don't want anymore. And so you go and you put it out on the stoop or it's where somebody else can pick it up. I live in a building where there's faculty and students. And so if you put something out, it just disappears like that. Because there's a lot of young students who, you know, probably come from warmer climates and need things. So you can say, well, I'm just throwing that away, or you can say I'm freely giving it. I'm offering it. Someone who is part of the chaplaincy program just sent me an email yesterday because he knows that we're going on a street retreat, some of us, and he is head of a temple in Chinatown where they always leave food out that's been on the altar. They leave it out for homeless people to pick up. So he was giving me the address of where to. So this is like discarding, right? It's an old orange that's been on the altar for a week, and then it goes downstairs and somebody can pick it up and take it home and eat it. So this freely giving something that's discarded. It's beautiful. The size of the gift, the value of the gift is not so important. What's important is giving, is that interaction, that transaction. Even if you don't see the other side of it, it's happening. And imagine, just close your eyes for a minute and think about how you feel when you give. What it feels like to give. My chest area expands and my face softens when I think of giving. You don't have to be rich to give. You can give all the time. You can just give little bits. Give what you can. This is what Dogen is talking about. This is the main quality of a bodhisattva, the ability to give. You give courage, you give support. You give a loving look at someone. You give a quarter. You open a door. It's that quality. And you build that in yourself. And you begin to give and give and give. It's marvelous. The second quality that Dogen talks about is kind speech. Now, this is not schmarmy. Kind of, you know, sickeningly sweet kind of speech. But it's speech that emanates from that same place that giving emanates from. Speech that is kind. Sometimes kind speech can be harsh. But if it's coming from a place of kindness, it is not going to damage. It is going to increase the bodhisattva field. So we do corrections with our colleagues at work, with our partners, with our family. We correct, but from a place of kindness. This is what Dogen is talking about. He says, just talk to all living beings as if they were babies. So it's a good practice. Sometimes I practice that, where I look at people and I imagine them as babies. Particularly, I still seem to have some political issues left over from the 60s that come up for me about certain politicians in the world. So one of my practices, which doesn't mean that I don't lobby, I don't do what I can for my point of view, but at the same time, to increase that kindness is just to imagine them as babies. Mm-hmm. We all have that baby face. So Dogen says, kind speech arises out of a loving mind and is the seed of a loving mind in compassion. Even when we have to have a difficult conversation, we can have a soft face, which makes an impression on the heart of the other. Dogen says, kind speech has the power to turn around the heavens and transform the world. You know, I was brought up in another era where I was a debater in high school. So you would go to a debate and you'd pull out of this bowl what position you would take. And then you would take that position, and then maybe the next round you'd take a different position on the same subject. And it was always very, very courtly and, you know, polite. And at the same time that we would be arguing vehemently for our perspective and our point of view, there wasn't what, you know, what goes on now in this country, which is just appalling. A kind of screaming that the political sides are doing. It's kind of, it's like shocking, really, to me. Hateful speech. There's a Soto Zen manual that kind of takes all of Dogen's works and mixes them together for the good and the bad. It's called Shushogi. But it has a very nice bit on kind speech that I'll read to you. Well, first it quotes Dogen. It says, "One must speak to others while thinking that one loves all living beings as if they were one's own children. Such speech," then, this is Shushogi, "is neither sentimental indulgence nor patronizing, but the true expression of love of the recipient. The Buddha himself gave good advice on right speech, recommending that before speaking we should consider if our words are true, if our words are kind, and if our words are appropriate, or if our words are helpful for the circumstance. Imagine a community, a society, a world where everyone spoke in such a way. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it appropriate? And is it helpful?" Kind speech. It's like good communication, one of our five expressions. The third quality of a bodhisattva is simply action, helpful conduct, just offering ourselves. What can happen when all we do is read about what's going on in the world? We can become paralyzed. It's incredibly important for your own spiritual strength and courage for you to act, to take an action, however small. You remind yourself that you are a being that is operating in this sphere. You know, I mean, you want to change the world, but you could smile at the baby that's crying this next to you. You can help the person on the street right out front. Offering help wherever it's needed without aggrandizing yourself. Dogen says, helpful conduct is the whole of the Dharma. That's all there is, really. All the rest that I've been talking about, good, the whole of the Dharma, helpful conduct. He says, if you realize this state of mind, helpful conduct will be enacted even in the grass, the wind, and water. So if you act, even the very breeze that's blowing in the window now acts. Karma, action. The final one that Dogen lists from those sutras is what is translated as cooperation, but the characters are the character for identity and the character for purpose and the character for doing. So identity doing is a, it's more intimate than cooperation. You know, we hear cooperation, and I don't know what you think, but I think of separate entities trying to make something happen, whereas identity action, you know, that kind of action that arises out of my sense of identity with you, that together we can do this thing, in a very different kind of quality. So he says, when we know identity action, self and other are one. And here's the Dogen again, so poetic. That the ocean does not exclude the waters of the rivers is identity action. River waters do not exclude the ocean either. This being so, water comes together to form the ocean. It is the ocean, and it is large. That is why it is large, because it accepts the river. Our Hudson is our great teacher of that. Wonderful flowing in and out of the rivers and the ocean. It's a wonderful metaphor for our Buddha field, our sphere of influence. To not tighten and think that we are so separate that we have to have our things, and we have to use harsh language to get what we need, but rather to open our hands, to open our hearts, to see that who we are is a constantly shifting kaleidoscope of energies. Just as the Hudson receives the waters from the Atlantic and gives its waters, and you can't tell which is which. It's marvelous. So Dogen says, to practice this identity action for all people with a gentle expression. I'm reading somebody who wrote something in 1240 based on something that was written in 400 or 300. And yet, right now, those aspects can really help us to pay attention. The way the world is right now, we can change it. We are it. Let us not become victims. Let us become courageous bodhisattvas. A bodhisattva carries people across to what? What other side? I know those of you who come often to the Dharma talks here have heard me read this poem many times, because every time I think about a bodhisattva, I have to read this poem. It's by a Korean master who was a monk and was a patriot who was finally killed in Korea in 1944. But he talks about the act of bringing folks over. It's called ferry boat and traveler. I am the ferry boat. You are the traveler. You tread on me with muddy feet. I embrace you and cross over the water. When I embrace you, deep or shallows or fast-shooting rapids, I can cross over. When you don't come, I wait from dusk to dawn, in the chill wind, the wet of snow and rain. Once over the water, you go on without a glance back. No matter, I know that sooner or later you will come. While I wait for you, day after day, I go on growing older. I am the ferry boat. You are the traveler. The key line for us all here is, when I embrace you, I can cross over. This is our life, Bodhisattvas.